It's time for the Score Evening Show, weeknight 6 till 9 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Here's your host, Rami Makhlouf.
That's me with you for the next 3 hours and live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I got Adam Studzinski on the other side of the glass, and what a show he and I have lined up for you tonight. Coming up on the show this evening, we'll talk about the draft of Noah Asenge. I'm still trying to learn how to say his name. Will Gottlieb will tell me the clear pronunciation of his name coming up at 6:20. The Bulls' first round pick, Will Gottlieb of CHGO Bulls, like I said here, at 6:20. Alex Cohen, Cubs play-by-play broadcaster for Marquee. He'll be here to talk some Cubs, obviously, at 7 o'clock. And Bob Nightingale of USA Today, their Major League Baseball columnist, he's here at 8 to talk some Cubs and Major League Baseball trade deadline, as we are just about 5 weeks away from then. We'll talk about what the Cubs and, yes, the White Sox might do between now and then. If you missed Mark Eversley, the Bulls GM, on Mullion Haw this morning, well, we will give you some of that coming up at 8:20. But I did want to start off talking about the Chicago Cubs. And when I'm not talking to those guys, I want to talk with you at 312-644-6767 if you want to get in on the conversation. As the Cubs, they do get the split with the Cardinals today, 3-0 in St. Louis, and it always feels good to beat those St. Louis Cardinals. And you got Shota Imanaga back on the mound, 5 innings of 1 hit, no runs. You'll take that, and it's very, very good to have him back in the rotation after what Matthew Boyd did yesterday. He had Michael Bush homering, got the power stroke back, his 13th of the year. So some good things to take out of St. Louis today, and it was big that they earned that split. I don't want to say, you know, a team that's in first place and by 3 games in late June, a team that's 15 games over 500, a team that's played very good baseball up until now and has been one of the best offenses in baseball. I think they're still second in the league in runs per game. I don't want to call anything must win or say that I was ready to hit the panic button by any means, but for my psyche as a Cubs fan, and I don't know if you're in the same boat, 312-644-6767, I kind of needed them to get this split with the St. Louis Cardinals, because I think, and I'm pretty sure I'm not the first to express this, losing that second game against the Cardinals, that was the low point of this Cubs season for me to this point. They were headed in a really, really bad direction. They had lost 5 of 6. The starting rotation was bad. They had given up 34 runs in 23 innings before Matthew Boyd stopped the bleeding last night in that win and got the first of the two that they stole in St. Louis to earn that split. But I really kind of needed this, because I did not feel good about where this season was headed after the hot start. And I don't know if I was overreacting, but man, this thing, and you know what? Quite frankly, it's still just a little bit too close. And you got to go to Houston and play a really good Astros team now after that. But this thing was getting too close and quite frankly, still a little bit too close for comfort. If you've heard me talk about the Cubs at all in my stints here on the Score, they give me the mic once or twice a week, and I always appreciate it when they do. I wasn't too worried about the Cincinnati Reds when they hired Terry Francona in the offseason, and a lot of people were talking about the Cincinnati Reds could be the sleeper team in the Central. And they got a good lineup. They got some pitchers. I was never buying the Cincinnati Reds as a legitimate threat to the Cubs or anybody else to take the NL Central. I wasn't even buying the Cardinals, quite frankly, and they weren't even planning on winning. This looked like a rebuild year where they were hoping to sell off some of their better players between the start of the season and the trade deadline. And they've gotten off to a really good start, and before the series, I think they had won 8 of their last 9, or including the first two in this series. They had won 8 of 9, so they had been on a really, really hot streak. And man, the one team that I did think could be a problem for the Cubs, and even after they got off to a slow start, I thought could still be a problem for the Cubs, was the Milwaukee Brewers. And here they come. They've been the best team in baseball since the last week in May. I happened to be at that game yesterday, the pitching duel between Paul Skeens and Mizorowski, the Brewers' new phenom that they just called up. He had his third start. That guy is nasty. His slider is hitting 95, 96 miles per hour. His curveball is in the mid to high 80s. I don't know where they found this guy. And quite frankly, I don't know where the Brewers keep finding arms. They put three guys on the mound yesterday that were pumping in 97, 98, 100 consistently. And they apparently have a few more coming down the pipeline. And like I said, I thought the Brewers might be a problem from the beginning. And I was never ready to count them out. Those other two teams, the Cardinals and the Reds, I wasn't sold on them, but I can't sit here after 80 games and discount or dismiss those teams sitting there six games and three games over 500 respectively and going into play yesterday, both within five games of the Chicago Cubs in first place. And just it almost doesn't even matter who the teams are. The idea of three teams within five games and within striking distance of the Cubs after the way this season started, quite frankly, was not something I thought I was going to have to deal with as a fan. Emotionally and mentally was not something that I thought I was going to have to deal with as a fan. But here we are. And that's why these last two wins against the Cardinals and to get the split in that series, absolutely huge for me, if for nothing else, if it wasn't panic time yet in terms of, you know, watching the scoreboard and the standings, for me and my mentality, my psyche, my emotional state as a Cubs fan, getting these two wins and keeping this lead in the NL Central with the Brewers red hot was absolutely essential, was crucial. I really, really needed this. But looking at if you put any stock in Fangraphs playoff odds and looking at what it is today, the Cubs have a 65% chance to win the division. The Brewers have a 20% chance to win the division. The Cardinals have an 11% chance to win the division. And then there are the Reds with a 3% chance to win the division. 0.0 for the Pittsburgh Pirates, in case you were wondering. Just like Blutarski from Animal House. 0.0. But 1 month ago, they were in a, and I know I don't need to tell you this, but the numbers are striking in terms of talking and looking at the playoff odds. The Cubs had a 73% chance to win this division a month ago, and the Brewers had a 5% chance. The Cubs have gone down by 10%. The Brewers have upped their chances by 15%. That's not a good trend. And I the Cubs need to put together another stretch here, another spurt of really, really dominant baseball to put that space between them and the Brewers again. I feel better. I can breathe today. But I need them to carry this into a real, real hot stretch and stack up some wins here and put a little bit more breathing room between them and the Brewers, because this is a little too close for comfort, quite frankly. Not just the Brewers, but all three of those teams being on the Cubs' heels is a little too close for comfort. And not what I thought this season was going to look like after the way it started. Again, never thought the Brewers were dead, but I didn't think there would be three teams within five or six games by the time July rolls around. That's not the type of season that I thought we were looking at. I need them to stack up wins, and getting Shota back today and the performance that you got from Boyd yesterday, those go a long way. But that pitching staff needs to get it together, because like I said, in the non-Matthew Boyd parts of the rotation going into yesterday, they'd given up 34 runs, 31 of those earned in 23 innings in the five starts before Matthew Boyd and Shota Imanaga, and had lost 5 of 6 to show for it. You lose another 5 of 6 and you might be looking up at the Brewers. The other thing that happened at the Cubs-Cardinals game today, and I'll be totally honest and transparent with you, I didn't see this happen when it happened. Daniel Palencia recorded the final out, and I needed to walk the dog and finish mowing my lawn before I headed to the studio. Can I just get something off my chest real quick? What's the point of a weather forecast? Can somebody tell me? Because 2 days ago, I went to ride my bike, and I was like, huh, looks a little cloudy. Let me check the old weather app. Nope, no rain, just cloudy. Starts pouring on me in the middle of a bike ride. Same thing today when I went out to mow my lawn this morning. So I had to go out and finish mowing the lawn before. Like, if you're wrong about a forecast a day in advance, a week in advance, I understand. How can you not tell me what's about to happen right now? Like, what good are you if you can't tell me what's about to happen right now? But I digress. So I was crunched for time. As soon as he records the final out, I'm like, got him. Fist pump, turn off the TV, leash up the dog, walk out the door. Well, Wilson Contreras was not happy. And I knew he was not happy earlier in the inning when he got hit by a pitch. And it probably started an inning earlier when the Cubs made him look kind of foolish. And to his credit, JD on the Marquee Sports Network saw it coming as the Cubs pull off the old double steal and get the insurance run.
So what do you like?
I like doing something. I'd run Dansby.
They're running Dansby. Contreras.
They're going to get this run here.
And they just stole a run. You're a genius.
Well, I mean, it's such a high-risk play when PCA's on the bases to do anything but make sure he doesn't get another 90 feet.
Yep. Yeah, it's literally once Wilson decides to make a throw, the play's over.
It's over, yeah. Kind of a Don Zimmer-like play there.
Ah. Knowing who you have on the bases, part of that is knowing who's behind the plate. And the Cubs know very well who's behind the plate in Wilson Contreras and his, let's just say, decision-making skills and his arm or throwing arm or lack thereof, that they knew he was going to try to do something there and wouldn't be able to, and they'd be able to steal a run. And I think Wilson was a little bit embarrassed. And then in the ninth inning, the Cubs, he gets hit by a pitch by Daniel Palencia, which you're obviously not trying to do. You're not trying to put a guy on base when you only have a 3-run lead. That's not something you do on purpose. But Wilson was a little heated about it. And then Palencia gets the last out and kind of chaos ensues.
Strike three called. Cubs win the ball game. Daniel Palencia strikes out the side. And now Wilson Contreras, being restrained by some of his teammates.
I don't know what Wilson, you know, there are times where he just does these things and you don't know, have any understanding why. And we saw it in Chicago, and you know, it's not like the Cubs are going to try to hit him and bring the tying run to the plate. That's for sure.
So finally, the Cardinals start heading to their dugout.
I swore a long time ago that, like, anybody who helped the Cubs win a World Series, especially the core guys, you know, and Wilson was definitely one of those, that they had a free pass. That I was going to root for them, be fans of them the rest of their careers, no matter where they went, even if they put on a Cardinals uniform. But Wilson is really testing me right there. Wilson Contreras is what are you doing, dude? What makes you think that the Cubs are trying to hit you there? It's an insane thought. And I had to remind myself the same thing that Ron Coomer reminded us right there, right here on The Score in the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. That's just kind of who Wilson Contreras is. And I kind of loved it about him when he was a Cub. You know what I mean? So I can't get too mad about it now that he's doing it in a Cardinals uniform. Free pass still stands for Wilson Contreras. And he said after the game that it was stupid and he overreacted and he shouldn't have done that. So bygones be bygones. For now, these two teams will meet again in just a few days. Next week, they'll meet again. We'll hit a quick break on the other side. We'll get into the Bulls' first-round draft pick with Will Gottlieb of CHGO Bulls. He'll join me, Rami Makhlouf, right here on the Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
With the 12th pick in the 2025 NBA Draft, the Chicago Bulls select Noah Essengay from Paul Jean Dubray, France, and the Ulm Club in Germany.
Let's go! Yeah. Let's go!
That call courtesy of ESPN. Commissioner Adam Silver announcing the Bulls with the 12th pick, taking Noah Essengay from the French League. Rami Makhlouf with you on the Score Evening Show. Alex Cohen will get back into some Cubs talk with the Cubs play-by-play broadcaster coming up at 7 o'clock. But joining me now on the Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. He covers the Bulls for CHGO, and you can find him on Twitter at Will_Gottlieb. It is Will Gottlieb. Will, how are you this evening, my man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
How did you like the pick? The variation of reactions to this pick has been kind of surprising to me. People are all over the place with this.
Yeah, it is really up and down. I think that's in large part because he's like kind of a mystery box. This is a European forward who is playing in the German league, 18 and a half years old, the second youngest player in the draft, but long, 6'10", almost a 7'1", standing wingspan, and he's a real athlete. So he can get up and down, play in transition. I think that really was something that the front office wanted to target, was a guy who had upside, which SNG does, but also somebody who fits into their system. So I like the pick. I wouldn't say I'm like in love with the pick. Just based on who was on the board, there wasn't really anybody that I would have preferred, but there were some trades that happened in the first round that, you know, first round picks going back and forth. It might have been good for the Bulls to accumulate a pick if they could have, but all things considered, definitely not a bad pick.
I know a few people. I was listening to Spiegel and Holmes on the way in, and Matt Spiegel, he saw Derek Queen go off the board, the center from Maryland, with the very next pick to the Pelicans, and one of those first round trades that you just alluded to there, Will, was that a guy that you had circled or that you thought would have been a good pick for the Bulls?
Yeah, Derek Queen's super interesting. Obviously, like, got a lot of attention for hitting that game winning shot in the tournament, but just super skilled big man. And that's really an area of need for the Bulls. I mean, Vooch has been great the last couple of years, but age 34, I think, age 35, like, he's not a long-term solution for this team. And so you figure you've got this really dynamic scoring big on the board for you. Why not take him? I think they could have done it, and it would have been a good fit that I think I probably would have talked myself into just because he's so talented. Like, the upside is really enticing for Derek Queen, but he's also got some real weaknesses. Like, he is not a shooter at all. I think 20% in college from three, that's like a big part of what the Bulls want to do is space the floor from the big position. And then if people are frustrated with Nikola Vucevic's defense, I think Derek Queen would be even worse on that end. Maybe he improves, but that's just not a part of his game. So, you know, if they would have made the pick, I could have talked myself into it, but I don't know. I just think like they wanted to get someone who fits their identity a little bit more. And I think SNG is kind of in that same tier. It makes sense to just go with the guy who is a better fit.
Talking with Will Gottlieb of CHGO Bulls here on the Score Evening Show with me, Rami Makhlouf. I'm not throwing this out there to like to put you into a corner or make you answer for this. I want you to clarify what you meant by this is maybe the Giannis type of swing at 15 of his draft class. I saw that quote on Twitter today. I know you're not saying he's going to be the next Giannis. What do you mean when you say that?
Yeah, probably not a very careful way to put it. He's just like the toolsy, athletic, giant forward who's kind of an unknown commodity. And, you know, you draft him late lottery, all similar things to when the Bucks took Giannis, I believe it was 15th overall. So just similar traits and a similar kind of swing on this high upside raw wing that could really turn into anything. You just don't know. I think like Pascal Siakam is kind of a better comp for him in terms of, like, if he hits his 100th percentile outcome, this is what he could turn into. And that's a really good player. Obviously, Giannis is, like, an all-time great, one of the best players in the league. So I certainly not an expectation or a prediction by any means, but just that kind of swing. On the other side of that is Bruno Caboclo, a guy that was 2 years away from being 2 years away when he was drafted, was the quote, but he's not in the league anymore. Or Alexei Pokuševski, or Tijan Salon last year. Like, there's so many guys that you forget about who were similar toolsy, long, athletic Euro wings, and they just didn't pan out. You just remember the ones that hit. So, yeah, probably not the most careful way to say that, but I do think there are some similarities there just in terms of the type of swing that they took on this kind of prospect.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 18-year-old European prospect with all the tools and putting that in air quotes. And like you said, the league is riddled with guys who came with all those labels and did not make it. And then you got, you know, the Giannis's and the Jokic's of the world who came with those labels and did pan out. How do you think Asenge fits in with the style of basketball we saw Billy Donovan implement towards the back half of last year after trading Zach LaVine? And is it even realistic to think that this 18-year-old, as we just said, project is going to come in here and play any sort of significant role for this team in his rookie season?
I think he fits perfectly with what they want. I mean, super athletic. This is a guy who, for his team in Germany, Ulm, was up and down, getting steals, like tipping passes away, run out dunks. Like, this is exactly the style of player that the Bulls really want. And I think he also provides a level of defense, both in terms of the perimeter, guarding the ball, but also switching onto bigger players, protecting the rim. He's got some real versatility there, which is an area of weakness for the Bulls. And so you install that into a core with Josh Giddey, assuming he is back, Kobe White, Modest Uzelis, you're able to play really fast. And I think, you know, he's not the shooter that he hopefully turns into. He was below 30% from three during this past year, but the Bulls really want to create three-pointers by getting into the paint and spraying it out to shooters. And so I think he can really help there too. And I think he fits really well there. I will say though, he is very raw. He's a project player. I think he can improve and like bring in energy right away. And so maybe he does get minutes, but if we learned anything from the Modest Uzelis experience last year, it was that Billy Donovan is not going to just give him 25, 30 minutes a game and let him go play. He's going to have to earn it. He's going to have to learn the defensive responsibilities and execute them. And that's what's going to allow him to earn minutes. And so it would not surprise me if he's playing 5-10 minutes a game for the first few months of the season before they kind of let him loose.
One of the concerns I've heard people express with this pick is he kind of does the same things that Modest Uzelis does, and there's some redundancy there in their game and the skills and what they bring to the court. How do you see those guys coexisting if and when, you know, Asenge is you know, a part of this team and at least a regular role player?
Yeah, I think there's some redundancies for sure. I mean, he's got similar size. They're both kind of like upright defenders, like high center of gravity. So I don't really view either of them as being the kind of guy that can like get over screens and hassle guards and like pick up full court the way Alex Caruso did for the Bulls for so many years. But like these are skill sets that every team needs to play up and down the lineup. And I think their athleticism and versatility will allow them to be really switchable defensively, will allow them to attack closeouts and get teams into mismatch situations where they can take advantage. So yes, I think there is a little bit of similar skill set going on, but Mark Eversley said after in his media session last night that that's a good problem to have. That's something that they want to do, and I think that speaks to how they are trying to build this team, the identity that they're trying to play with.
Talking with Will Gottlieb, CHGO Bulls. Last one for you here, Will. Tonight in the second round, they moved from 45 to 55 for cash considerations. It's not a big deal. You know, it's a second-round pick. It's from moving from middle to late second round. It's not a big deal in my book, but that doesn't seem like the type of move that a young team like the Bulls that's trying to get better should be doing for cash considerations. How did you see that move?
Yeah, I don't think it looks great. The optics are not
exactly.
Something that like a young rebuilding team, I mean, they talked about it last night. They should be like taking these picks and taking swings on guys. They do stay in the round, albeit moving down to 55, as you said, where the prospects are just not going to be as good. NIL this year really impacted the second round in particular. I think a lot of guys who could have been late first round picks, early second round picks, are now going back to school. Yaxel Lendeberg is a big name that people thought was going to be in the 20s. He's going back to Michigan next year. LeBaron Filan, Miles Bird. There's a ton of guys that I think are basically, you know, reducing the depth in this draft. So do I think there was going to be a ton of talent there at 45? No. Do I think that like moving back to 55 is that big a deal? Not really, but like you see other teams moving back or moving out of the draft and picking up multiple second round picks, or you see teams packaging picks to get a first in a future draft, something like that, that would have set them up a little bit better rather than just getting some cash consideration. So I think it does. The optics aren't great, but they probably weren't going to get someone that impactful with the 45th pick. And then another piece of it is that they are pretty much, their roster is pretty much full. And so once you re-sign Giddey and you sign Asenge, that's 14 out of 15 roster spots. I think they want to leave some flexibility open in free agency, maybe bring back Trey Jones. But if not, you know, they'll be able to either sign who they take with the 55th pick here tonight, or draft and stash that player and try to bring them over in a future season.
That's Will Gottlieb covering the Bulls for CHGO. You can find him on Twitter at @Will_Gottlieb. My guest for the last few minutes on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. I know you got to run. You got your own night two draft show coming up over there at CHGO. Man, I really appreciate the time and hope you guys have a great time over there.
I appreciate it. Yep, thanks for having me on.
There's Will Gottlieb joining me. And yeah, man, this is kind of, and I want to talk about the Bulls. And if you want, I have time between now and 7 o'clock when I'll be talking a little bit of Cubs with Alex Cohen of the Marquee Sports Network. You want to get in on the show, 312-644-6767. And The way I felt about this pick of Noah Senge, kind of how I just feel about the Bulls in general and how I've felt about most of the things that they do here of late. Now, I'll admit, I got on the hype train when they went, 15-5 to close the season. I think you had that crazy finish against the Lakers. I was doing the morning show the next day with Molly, and that was a fun day of shows to be excited about something that the Bulls did for the first time in I don't know how long. It was fun. I enjoyed it. Okay. And I kind of got into all that, and I was like, hey man, they could win that play-in game, and who knows, maybe it'll be a hard out in the first round. I was wrong. Okay. I was wrong. But for the most part, the way I feel about most of the things that the Bulls do is just like, okay.
And I have no strong feelings one way or the other.
Pretty much, yeah. And I was listening to Spiegel and Holmes on my way in, and Lawrence pretty much said the same thing. Like, I like the pick, but I like the pick with that tone. You heard it in my voice right there. I'm like, yeah, I like the pick. Like, who... And like Will just said, maybe you found, and not comparing him to those guys, but maybe you found like that diamond in the haystack, like the Bucks did with Giannis, or the Nuggets did with Jokic, or if not to that level, maybe you found a quality player, and it's just going to take some time for him to become that quality player. I mean, all the tools are there. 6'10", 7'1" wingspan. He gets up and down the court. Defense is okay from what I understand. Lateral movement isn't that great. But, like, if he's going to be good, it'll probably take a few years. And quite frankly, that's fine. Because of where the Bulls are right now, and I don't expect them to be anything of relevance here for the next year or two at least. And so maybe this kid comes into his own at just the right time after the Bulls have some kind of plan, hopefully at some point. And that's what I want to talk with you about at 312-644-6767, is that, I guess I'm fine with this pick. But I still don't really know what this is or what the plan is. But they seem to think they have a plan, and we'll hear a little bit from the Bulls GM coming up in just a few minutes. But I also want to hear from you at 312-644-6767. How do you feel about the Noah Senge pick? How do you feel about where the Bulls are and where this thing is headed moving forward? 312-644-6767. Alex Cohen of Marquee Sports Network joins me to talk some Cubs at 7 o'clock. I'll talk some Bulls with you right after this on The Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score.
I would say that was a long fit. I was playing with preseason games often at the beginning of the year. Yeah, I think I do a pretty good job. I put like 20 points. And, that was like 1 year ago. So I just like built some confidence all over the year. I have increased like all my stuff, my bag. So I would say that.
There's Noah Senge, the Bulls' first round pick at number 12. I think I said in the last segment he played in the French League. He played in the German League. I will correct myself. No need for you to do that on the text line or at Rami is tweeting, at Ramie is tweeting is how you can follow me on the old Twitters. And like I said before the break, I'm fine with the pick. You know, I guess I like it. Second youngest guy in the draft. Lots of athletic ability. Toolsy, a good draft word. Okay defender. Has shown flashes as a passer and a finisher. I'm just reading the scouting report right now, both out of the post and in the short roll. It's fine. Like it's fine. I wasn't gonna get. I don't think they were gonna make any pick there at number 12 that I was gonna be like, yeah, there's the guy that's gonna turn this thing around. I know Spiegel was upset that they didn't go with Derek Queen, the center out of Maryland, who went with the very next pick to the New Orleans Pelicans via a trade with the Hawks. Derek Queen wasn't gonna solve the Bulls' problems. He wasn't gonna, and like Will Gottlieb just said, if you didn't like Vooch's defense, you'd have been real upset. You'd have been real upset with Derek Queen. Nobody that they were gonna get at 12 was gonna come in here and change the fortunes of the Bulls franchise, or probably even be a major contributor to this season. Like, Derrick Queen probably would have played. Was he going to take them from a 39-win team to a 50-win team? No. Nobody in that draft was. Because the Bulls were at number 12. Because they refuse to tank, to bottom out, and get near the top of the draft, where you can get a player the likes of a Cooper Flagg or a Dylan Harper. And that's where the root of the, whether it's frustration or anger or apathy or whatever it is that you're feeling towards the Bulls right now, or not feeling towards the Bulls right now, that's what it comes back to. Not the pick itself, not Noah Senge, and because you don't know anything. You knew as much about Noah Senge before the night started as I did, which was probably not much. But this goes back to the plan, or the lack thereof a plan, when it comes to the Chicago Bulls. And if you missed Mark Eversley, the GM, on Mullion Haw earlier this morning, I'm going to give you a good chunk of that coming up at 8:20. But this quote from Eversley, who, by the way, is the new face, he's the new mouthpiece of the Bulls. They decided it wasn't, I guess he bombed so hard after the Zach LaVine trade that they were like, yeah, we're not going to throw Carter Chauvis out there anymore. Because people didn't know what he was saying at his last press conference. Maybe we try this Mark Eversley thing. Throw him out there after the draft. And quite frankly, I was as confused after Mark Eversley was done talking as I was when I heard Arturas Karnišovas talk a few months ago. Here's what he had to say about sort of the big picture and the plan for this Bulls team.
We've said it before, but it's worth repeating. We are in transition. We took a step back this season to reposition and retool. And while we don't know exactly what next year's roster will look like, we're encouraged by the early progress and the direction that we are heading. Over the next 18 months, through the draft tonight, free agency, and with financial flexibility coming in 2026, we believe we are setting ourselves up to take meaningful steps forward.
What does that mean? What does that mean? And I know that they got contracts coming off the books after next year. In one sense, I kind of know what he means, but what does that mean?
I haven't heard any of that. I didn't hear all of it. I heard a lot about most of it, but what I did hear, I did not hear any of that.
Exactly. Exactly. What are these meaningful steps that you're taking after next season? I haven't looked at the free agent class of 2026, but I can't imagine it's much to write home about, because free agency isn't really all that much of a thing in the NBA anymore. Most of these guys are signing ultra max deals with the team that they're with, and then if they're not happy there, they'll force a trade in a year or two. That's the new trend. Free agency is not, is there somebody who's gonna be disgruntled and asked to go to the Bulls? Because that's not a thing anymore. Let's say Giannis is on the block, because everybody wants to put Giannis on the block. I saw Shams doing it again today, even though Giannis is working out with half of Milwaukee in Greece right now. And I don't just mean the team. I mean, like, half of Milwaukee is in Greece right now working out with Giannis, and yet rumors abound that he's not happy and is going to force his way out of Milwaukee. You think if Giannis wants to force his way out of Milwaukee that the Bulls are going to be at the top of his list? I know he always has nice things to say about Chicago and the Bulls and the history of Michael Jordan and all that. He's not wanting to come here. The Bulls have, and not just with the way that they've played, but the way that they've operated as a franchise, as an organization, have played themselves right out of this being a desirable destination for superstars. There was a time where that was the case. There was a time where every time a guy hit free agency, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, or a guy was looking to get out of his current situation, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, that whole thing, that the Bulls were on their list. Those days are gone. So when he says they're setting themselves up to take meaningful steps, how and with who? And where are these meaningful steps going to come from? Are you going to tank somehow next year to get a high draft pick? I just don't And this is the real problem with the Bulls. And this is why, no matter who they drafted today, my response is probably just going to be like, oh, yeah, okay, all right, fine. Let's see what this guy is. Is because I see no vision and I see no plan. 312-644-6767. Would like to talk some Bulls with you here on the Score Evening Show. Let's go out to I-57 and Mike, who dialed that number. Now Mike's on the Score. What's up, Mikey?
Robbie, it's good. I love your show. I really do. It's great. Listen, here's the thing where they went from 44th to 55th for cash. Well, I mean, come on. You think any big names coming here? But I think it's a nice start that they're trying to recoup some of the $90 million they paid that bum, Patrick Williams, or the $20 million they're paying Ball just to be on the DL every other week. There's no plan there. I mean, none whatsoever.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. And every signing, like he brings up Patrick Williams. Man, when they extended Zach LaVine, I was like, why? What are you doing? And now they're about to do the same thing with Josh Giddey. It's almost as if the plan is to stay at or just below the middle of the pack. And that is the worst place to be for an NBA franchise. But it almost seems like that's the goal. And I don't know if it's because we're number one in attendance here in Chicago in the NBA, and the Reinsdorfs just don't care beyond that, so they'll keep on being middle of the pack and keep on extending Billy Donovan and AK and Eversley. I don't know what it is that motivates them to be so damn mediocre and to not have any real plan to get out of mediocrity, but I don't see a plan or a vision, and I don't know that they were going to do anything last night that was going to, like, clarify the vision and the plan for me, where I was going to be like, oh, okay, this is what they're doing. No, the time to do that has come and gone, which is why I don't really see where the next opportunity to pivot is. Even when Eversley is talking about, you know, the contract situations and the financial flexibility that they'll have in the offseason of 2026, okay, but then what are you going to do? What are you doing with that? How do you get out of this hole of mediocrity that you've been in since Derrick Rose's knee blew up? How do you do that? Where is the major move? I don't see it. And again, I liked what I saw last year, and the Eastern Conference is kind of wide open now. The Celtics are tearing things down. Tyrese Halliburton's Achilles blew up in Game 7. Dame Lillard's Achilles blew up earlier in the playoffs. The Knicks are still looking for a head coach. Like, yeah, the East is wide open in a sense, but is there any place for the Bulls to make that move and make that pivot to be relevant in this conference and in this league again? I don't see it. Even in the vulnerable position that the Eastern Conference is in right now, I just don't see it. So I hope Noah Senge is Giannis, and maybe that's their ticket out of this mess, this nonsense that we've been dealing with for so long. We'll hit a quick break on the other side, switch gears back to the Chicago Cubs, and play-by-play broadcaster for the Marquee Sports Network, Alex Cohen, joins me, Rami Makhlouf, on the Score Evening Show right after this on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.